The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health. And today we're going to be talking with author Barry Gold about his new book, We're Overdosed, which traces the history of opium, where he also talks about advocating for tighter federal legislation to eradicate drugs and also innovative treatment programs. Barry is a pharmacologist who has a BS in zoology from the University of Cincinnati. He also earned a PhD in pharmacology from Boston University and won 3 postdoctoral fellowships at Yale in pharmacology and psychiatry. He began his career teaching medical school and then moved on to the pharmaceutical industry, where he was director of biochemistry at an anesthetics company and where he began managing drug development in the U.S. and Europe. Barry enjoys writing, has written articles for, among others, Women's Day, and he's entered various writing contests where he's had some success. And we're so happy to have Barry here. As I said, his new book, We're Overdosed, is really just came out. And I had the honor of Barry coming to talk with me in my capacity as Director of Opioid Prevention Strategy here in Ulster County. So Barry, welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio.
Thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak to my readership.
Sounds great. So Barry, what inspired you to write this particular book at this particular point in time?
Well, I borrow a phrase from Mark Twain, write what you know. And since I am an expert on drugs, an expert that is at the medical level, mm-hmm. I chose to write about drugs, and I'm particularly interested in the history of drugs. And furthermore, I had an experience many years ago. I was teaching a weekend course to recovering addicts entitled The Pharmacology of Drugs of Abuse, and these addicts were studying for their certification as counselors, drug counselors. And they joined me for lunch uninvited, and one of them said to me, why do you teach us? I said, well, I teach because it's payback for me. Society supported me, and I'm giving back to society. And they said, oh, you're not an addict? I said, no, I've never done drugs. They said, because only addicts are interested in us. And it was such a sad statement, because essentially, as a society, we've written off drug addiction as people of bad character. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that. I believe it's a medical issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and here in Ulster County, where, you know, we've confronted the opioid epidemic head on, you know, we did encounter a lot of that, a lot of people thinking, you know, it's a character flaw or a moral failing or whatever. But the public health community writ large thinks about opioid use disorder as a chronic recurring brain disease, one that deserves to be treated with dignity and respect.
Exactly.
Just like any other chronic disease.
Exactly my feeling.
So, Barry, what are, say, 2 or 3 of the core messages that you would like readers to come away with after reading your book?
Well, my feeling is the opioids, that is, the natural opioids, such as morphine and codeine, the semi-synthetic opioids, such as heroin made from morphine, and the totally synthetic opioids that we have prescriptions for from our surgeon or us, our orthopedic surgeon. Those drugs have hooks, and I urge people, don't get caught. You have no control over their performance. You start to look at your watch when you're taking those drugs, and you say, oh, I have another hour until I can take another one, but I'm in pain now. That's a sign you are succumbing to the hook in the drug.
Mm-hmm. And it, from the research that I'm aware of, it only takes 5 days, as little as 5 days, to become addicted to opioid-based pain relievers. And, you know, we know there are a lot of reasons why the epidemic is with us. But first and foremost is, you know, the aggressive marketing of these medications by the pharmaceutical companies. And in fact, as part of the recent class action opioid settlements, the plaintiffs, who are the state's attorneys general, used the very same arguments that they used against big tobacco in 1998, was that, hey, companies, you knew by your own research that you had highly addictive and dangerous products, that you continue to aggressively market them. What do you see? And you've been on the inside of the pharmaceutical world and also in medical schools. What did you see?
Well, in fact, my last project in industry was to develop a 24-hour formulation of a well-known patented opioid drug known as Dilaudid. And what do I see? I see mistakes made by the industry. To wit, there's certain companies that have suffered financially as a result. I won't impugn anyone, but nevertheless, you are absolutely correct. The some of these companies formulated these drugs and sold them aggressively without regard to the possible effect. And people, being less than avid readers as we grow as a society, fell for their pitch, and they started taking these drugs. And very often physicians would prescribe too many, and what they did with the extra drugs was sell them to their neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I know several stories like that.
You know, as we look at the efforts over the last few decades to combat, you know, the drug epidemics of every kind, you know, we see that a lot of emphasis put on reducing supply, right? With the war on drugs, what have you, going after drug traffickers and dealers, which must be done. But it occurred to me, you know, it occurred to us as we were developing a strategic framework for confronting the opioid epidemic here in Ulster County, that simply working on the supply side of the equation doesn't work, because as long as there's an overwhelming demand, the supply will simply rise to meet it. And, you know, that the cartels really wouldn't even exist in Central America if it weren't for the insatiable demand for drugs here in this country. And, you know, a lot of that was driven by a culture that really, in my opinion, really glorifies drugs. You know, it sends this pervasive message out to people and young people with all of the marketing. Hey, whatever inevitable difficulties or, you know, setbacks you have in your life, there's a drug for that. And so is it a mystery why we have a drug epidemic here in the United States?
Well, there's a variety of reasons presented. I mean, there's issues with socialization in our mm-hmm. society. The mm-hmm. evidence for that is drug addiction, deaths mm-hmm. from drug addiction rose during the COVID epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
The theory is people didn't have contact with other people, and therefore they turned to drugs to get rid of this loneliness they felt.
Mm-hmm.
It is a complex issue, and simply focusing on the supply side does us a disservice, because it tends to place blame rather than responsibility and say, let us all take a look and see how we can go after this pandemic, to borrow a word from COVID, and attack it on a variety of issues, not just advertisement or mm-hmm. or pharmaceutical aggressive marketing, but also what is it on the side of society that's driving drug use?
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned loneliness and the loss of socialization.
Right. And, you know, social associations is really, and for all chronic diseases in the public health world, social associations or lack thereof is one of the primary driving forces for poor health and behavioral health outcomes. And, you know, that really segues into the part of your book where you talk about the correlation between mental health and drug use, the coexistence of both, and that how users often try to blunt the psychological pain, with the use of drugs even though they know they're dangerous. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
I can. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I have postulated that mental health disorder and drug abuse lie along a continuum of mental health. Now, I don't have evidence for that. But nevertheless, the incidence of mental health disease among drug addicts is very high, and there's a very strong correlation. Now, does mental illness or mental disease cause drug abuse? No, it does not necessarily. But people, as you say, try to blunt the pain of loneliness or loss of a loved one or failure in the business world.
Childhood traumas maybe too.
Childhood trauma. Through the use of drugs. They just find they have no one to talk to. They can't talk about it. And they turn to drugs because it's so painful they can't operate with that pain in their minds.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not really a conscious decision, right? It's just another way, an escape path, so to speak, you know. And we can talk about that a little bit more. But Barry, first we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and we'll be back after these short words.
I'm Ray, a professional animator. Unfortunately, I'm one of nearly 800,000 people who had a stroke this year. Incredibly, my stroke was captured on my own doorbell camera. Scary stuff. I didn't know if I would live. And if I lived, I didn't know how a stroke might affect my work, my life. Fortunately, the EMTs took me right to the Hudson Valley's only comprehensive stroke center, part of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, where they use every technology and technique to deliver the most advanced stroke care available. And thanks to the incredible care I received from the talented doctors, nurses, and staff at WMC Health, just a few months later, I got back to living my normal life, working on my next cool animation project and playing soccer with my daughter. Incredible. For information on reducing stroke risk and to learn more about my incredible story, go to wmchealth.org/stroke recovery. That's wmchealth.org/stroke recovery.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network, advancing care here.
I'm William Shatner. I've been around a long time, but I'm truly humbled when I see the real battles our brave, paralyzed veterans have faced defending our freedom and when they come home.
I had just come home from serving over in Germany. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open, and I broke my neck. It left me paralyzed for the rest of my life.
I was on a routine patrol, and we were in the desert of Kuwait, and the vehicle flipped and landed on top of me, which left me paralyzed from the waist down.
Okay, folks, this is heroism. That's why I'm proud to support Paralyzed Veterans of America, because they've kept their promise to never leave a fallen soldier behind. A roof over their heads, accessible homes, cars, jobs, benefits.
PVA has brought me back to life.
Show them their sacrifice hasn't been in vain. Go to PVA.org to learn how you can make a difference.
There are many sounds in your daily life, ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Today, we're talking with Barry Gold, the author of We're Overdosed. Barry has extensive experience in the pharmacological world, and his new book is really interesting. And Barry, before the break, we were talking about how people who are suffering from different traumas, isolation, other things going on in their lives, how they often turn to drugs as a means of escape. And, you know, I mentioned to you during the break that, you know, I've been studying Buddhist teachings for a number of years where they really talk about that, how our society emphasizes happiness or, you know, trying to outrun suffering or, you know, or gloss it over with, you know, pursuing power, money, drugs, sex, what have you. but that attempt inevitably fails because the only real way to address suffering is to confront it, understand its causes, transform it, and then and turn it into a healing, a learning and growing experience. You know, it does seem like drugs really fits squarely into that, right? Into that kind of not really dealing with, you know, one's core suffering.
So it's a form of chemical avoidance.
Yeah.
I think people are surprised when it may alleviate what's bothering them, but it also blunts all emotion and all feeling, and they're not prepared for that.
You know, we were talking also in the break too, is how people we see it in our treatment programs and rehabilitation programs, where often the programs are treating the physiological addiction part of it with varying degrees of success. But then the individual gets released out of the program. They go back into the world. They go back into their isolation or their unaddressed traumas. Unfortunately, sooner or later, end up overdosing again and again, and maybe at some point run out of luck.
It's true. In fact, drugs killed 108,000 people in 2022 in the United States. And that is a scary number. 18% of high school freshmen have tried drugs. Mm-hmm. And yet I have a 13-year-old. It scares me to think what I'm pushing out into the future. It is true that people need others to talk to. If it's not a spouse or a parent or a sibling, let it be a friend. Let it be a doctor. Let it be a group. Let it be a religious organization, mm-hmm. but seek an opportunity to discuss your issue.
You know, Barry, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you did interview me a little bit about some of the innovative programs that we had set up here in Ulster County, one of which is called the High-Risk Mitigation Team. And the purpose of that team was to work with individuals over the multi-year continuum of treatment, care, and recovery, with the recognition that there will be inevitable setbacks, but that this team is an interdisciplinary team that would really stay with that individual regardless of the setbacks and always be there for them, so that when they did stumble and fall, they would be there to catch them and help them, you know, and not only working with the, you know, treatment part of it, but with also, you know, things like employment, housing, you know, social associations, working with their families, their support networks. It seems like that's the way to go.
Oh, I would agree. In fact, there's a new movement available in many cities called risk reduction. And what you described is an example of risk reduction, but far more than just saying, all right, here's a clean needle to use.
Yes.
You're addressing the social environment of the individual, of the drug user, and saying, how can we help you with employment or your family or any other issue that you're carrying around with you? Mm-hmm. And you've had remarkable success in that county.
You know, thank you. You know, it's interesting because, you know, we see this with all manner of chronic diseases, opioid use disorder being one of them, that you can't take an individual or a family out of the total context in which they live their lives, with all of its challenges and barriers and even opportunities, and expect them to do better unless you really, you know, it's a kind of transformational change that's really needed to break that cycle of recurring addiction or generational poverty or whatever those things are, you know, that to me, being in the trenches and observing this for many years now is what's really badly needed and in short supply.
Oh, agreed. I think we need to examine how we have structured our society and say, how can we help each other by building more human relationships, mm-hmm. and maintaining those that are important to you?
Absolutely. So Barry, how your book's been out for a little while now. How are readers responding to it? Are you getting interesting letters from far corners of the globe?
Interestingly, I'm not receiving a lot of correspondence, but I logged on to Amazon last week and I saw that only Amazon said we have 3 copies left, more expected. So Amazon sold out, and everyone has said to me, well, how many copies did they have? And the answer is, I don't know. My publisher hasn't told me. But I contacted.
Better check the books.
Are you going to do a second printing? And they said, we don't have to. We use a distributor, and the distributor has plenty of copies and will resupply Amazon and any other retailer. Mm-hmm. So thank you for asking.
Yeah. So have you gotten any emails or any and so far, or any readers or professionals in the field thinking about what you?
Not directly. I've gotten a lot of verbal comments from people who've said to me, wow, you did a lot of research. And I'll be the first to point out that book took me 3.5 years to write. And it was wall-to-wall research, 7 days a week.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was accused of talking about nothing else for those 3 years.
You know, members of your family avoiding you. I think we have to do something else now, Dad, or, you know.
Well, I'm a single 13-year-old, right. So I work hard.
So Barry, one of the sections of your book talks about your ideas for decreasing illicit trade in drugs. Can you talk about those for a second?
Yeah, I took a lesson from my days managing international drug development, and we managed with a team approach. And what do I mean by a team approach? I mean a multidisciplinary team. I had a physician on my team. I had a marketing expert. I had a regulatory expert, a basic scientist, and a chemist. And we all met together once a month, and we talked about how do we advance this drug through the regulatory network. Well, I borrowed that concept, and I said, maybe we should go after managing our drug problem with a multidisciplinary approach. I thought about it, and I said, well, let's, for example, take law enforcement, the DEA. Let's take the regulatory agency, the FDA, and let's take the research arm of the U.S. government, National Institute on Drug Abuse, part of NIH in Bethesda, Maryland, and let's all manage them through a single person, perhaps a cabinet-level person, but as a multidisciplinary team. And such a multidisciplinary team, I believe, can more quickly formulate a plan by which we can interdict drug use in this country. Mm-hmm. It's a far-reaching concept. Mm-hmm. Am I reorganizing the government? Nothing is beneath me.
Mm-hmm. Now, does that approach include working on both the supply and demand sides of the equation?
Very much so, yeah. Because I've included law enforcement, mm-hmm. and I've included research. Mm-hmm. And those are the two opposite ends of the continuum of how we go after the drug problem. Uh-huh. We have other agencies like Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration and several others.
Right.
But nevertheless, I think a multidisciplinary team where all these aspects of government report to a single person, and that person can present the ideas to a higher authority, mm-hmm. such as president or Congress.
Right. So, and rally the national community writ large.
So, indeed. Yeah.
So Barry, we're running out of time, unfortunately. How do people get in touch with you if they would like to correspond with you, ask you questions, offer ideas?
Well, you can log on to my website, barrygoldwriter1word.com. Mm-hmm. And in there, I have a separate email address to which people can write. And I'd love to hear from people.
That's great. Well, Barry, thank you so much for joining us. The book is We're Overdosed. The author is Barry Gold. It's a very interesting book, well-researched, well-thought-out. And I would urge everyone out there to get a copy and read it. It's really a great read. It's available on Amazon, and that's We're Overdosed. Thank you, Barry Gold. We really appreciate your being here.
Thank you, Van. I enjoyed it.
You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.